Say that you opened a business and it failed. Does that make you a failure? You got married and then divorced. Does that make you a bad person? You got hurt and you can't work. Does that make you useless? No, 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 and no. Failure is an event that happens to you. Failure isn't who you are. If an event like the preceding happens to you, pick yourself up and get ready for the next event in your life. When you know in your heart that you can survive whatever happens, you can relax and begin to extract from life what life has to offer. Oftentimes, the only thing you need to overcome is a bad attitude. An attitude of expectancy has more to do with success or failure than any other factor. If you expect to do well, more often than not, you do. If you expect to do poorly, you do. I know a man who had an especially bad case of stinking thinking. He refused to get close to his wife because he was convinced that she was going to leave him one day, and he thought that her departure wouldn't hurt as much if he wasn't too attached to her. Well, you guessed it. She felt the urge to leave because he acted like she didn't exist. Fortunately, his wife had a better attitude than he did, and when he realized how wrong he had been and began to show her the attention she deserved, she took him back. A strong movement is on in the United States to teach ethical behavior. Actually, the emphasis is on the wrong concept. The focus should be on teaching integrity, because a person with integrity behaves in an ethical manner. Having integrity enables you to focus on your goals and quickly get back on track if unexpected events temporarily derail you. No matter what comes your way, stay with your plan. In the 1940s, a young inventor named Chester Carlson took his idea to 20 corporations, including some of the biggest in the country. They all turned him down. After 7 long years of rejections, he finally got a tiny company in Rochester, New York, the Halloid Company, to purchase the right to his electrostatic paper copying process. Halloid became Xerox Corporation. Chester Carlson could have seen himself as a failure, but he got past each rejection. His enthusiasm carried him as far as he needed to go. Sure, he felt dejected at times, but he saw failure as an event, not a measure of himself, and thus he was able to move on to the next opportunity. You can choose to do the same thing. Rather than focus on your problems, keep looking for opportunities. Maybe a downsizing at your company has put you out of work temporarily. You can look at your new free time as a blessing or a curse. Just having an opportunity to consider things that were previously out of your realm of interest can produce incentive to move in a new direction. Opportunities are everywhere. You just need to be on the lookout for them. If you're going to be successful, you probably will have to forget those who say that you can't. On occasion, you've probably been told that you can't do this, have no talent for that, and so on. Sometimes these well-meaning people are misguided in their efforts and just plain wrong in their thinking. You can measure IQ, but not want to. You can measure the size of your head, but not the size of your heart. So follow your heart as you use your head to develop your skills and talents. An inspired you can accomplish awesome tasks. To be able to handle the rough spots, practice forgiving people. Many argue that their offender doesn't deserve to be forgiven. But what the offender deserves is entirely beside the point. You deserve to forgive that individual. The person who hurts you damages your past and controls your present. Surely you're not going to give him or her permission to control and negatively influence your future, are you? Forgiveness is essential for your own growth and success. If you're incapable of forgiving on your own, and many people can't, I encourage you to seek counseling to guide you through the maze so that you eventually can forgive. As my friend Vicky Hitchkiss says, that's important because one of these days you will either say, I wish I had, or I'm glad I did. Sometimes our greatest battles come from those we create. Nothing knocks you down a notch quicker than an inflated opinion of yourself. Don't get me wrong. Being proud of your accomplishments is good. But when you start thinking that you know more than anyone else, watch out. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you had as much foresight as hindsight and were able to avoid mistakes altogether? Not only is that hope unrealistic, but it's also limiting. You see, mistakes are often the springboard for major accomplishments. Here are three tips for handling a mistake, either at home or at the office. Don't let a mistake depress or discourage you. See a mistake as a step on the road to a solution. Realize that depression and discouragement are negatives that limit the future. Admit the mistake. Yes, admitting your mistakes takes courage, but the recognition of errors is a sign of maturity. Not to recognize them is to deny them, and denial limits your future. Understand that when you confront your mistakes, you can take full advantage of them as a positive experiences that they can be. When you ignore mistakes or try to conceal them, they are almost always negative. We're ready for our fourth part, your goals in life. In this part, we look at making the seven spoke of life, physical, mental, spiritual, family, career, financial, and personal, all they can be. Physical health is often ignored as an essential part of success. Yet everyone knows how difficult concentrating and performing even simple tasks can be when pain and discomfort push their way into your consciousness. When the body is neglected, fatigue or illness ensues. Poor health and substandard physical conditioning adversely affect being productive at work or at home, enjoying time with friends and family, and even your ability to relax. The first step to physical health is that you team up with your physician for better healing. In fact, one of the most important components of the healing process is the physician and patient working together. The treatment the physician gives you, combined with the words of encouragement you hear, is enormously helpful in the healing process. Carefully ask questions. Listen attentively to what he or she has to say. Assure him or her that the two of you are going to work together and follow through on that promise. The second step is to recognize the impact of thinking on your health. The more optimistic you are that results are just around the corner, the more likely those results are to happen. The magic word is expectation. If you plan and prepare for good health by thinking positively, eating right, exercising, and doing the other things that I recommend in this section, you can expect good health. People frequently say to me, "Well, you sure do feel good today." My response is always the same. Yes, many years ago I planned on feeling good today. Actually, I plan on feeling good every day. I emphatically believe that attitude has a direct bearing on what happens to me in every area of life, including my health. If you take that approach, you'll stay healthier. The third step is one I know you know. Engage in physical activity. When you're motivated enough to take the stairs instead of the elevator, and you move from a sedentary lifestyle to a more physically active one, you discover incredible benefits. Listen to some of them. Being physically active causes a substantial reduction in stress and a huge increase in energy. Exercise is a depression breaker. It increases self-confidence and gives you a sense of well-being. Physical activity is good for weight management, gives greater stamina, and substantially decreases back, neck, and shoulder pain. Being physically active improves sleep, increases alertness, and helps you to maintain your independence as you add birthdays. Physical activity expands creativity and enhances sexual response. Being physically active enhances and encourages other healthy habits and may reduce your need for some medications. With all the studies you see in newspapers and magazines and hear about on television, you may be confused about what foods to eat and how and when to eat. I'm sure you're going to love the next words of wisdom. Don't dig your grave with your teeth. Watch what you eat. The good news is that you really don't have to be an expert to eat properly. Here are a few ground rules for eating. Eat only when you're hungry. Decide in advance how much you're going to eat. Choose a plate that's smaller than the one you normally use. A small plate makes the amount of food on it appear larger, whereas on a large plate, even a reasonable amount of food looks small. Never eat while standing up. Instead, always eat while seated in the same place at home. Don't eat in front of the television. You can consume an unusually large amount of food simply because it is available and because you're not paying attention. Stop eating when you're full and long before you're stuffed. Eat slowly and chew your food thoroughly. Lay your fork down after each bite. You may even want to place your fork at an odd angle, requiring a slight reach to pick it up again to remind yourself to slow down. Be careful about the music you listen to while you're eating. With soft, soothing music, you eat less and more slowly. When you listen to loud music with a fast beat, you eat more and faster, and frequently, whatever is in sight. Eat healthy snacks between meals, and then eat smaller meals. Eat something healthy, such as a half grapefruit, 30 minutes to an hour before a meal. Filling up on a low-calorie, low-fat, highly nutritious food before sitting down to a meal has a definite impact on your appetite. Develop an appetite for many different foods. The more foods you enjoy, the easier it is to satisfy your hunger cravings. Finally, make your last meal of the day a light one. Finish eating your last meal of the day before 7 p.m. Be sure to choose the right foods. Forrest Tennant, M.D., Ph.D., says that a dependence on carbohydrates is the number one eating problem today. If you find that you're constantly fatigued or that you get tired or sleepy after meals, you may be eating excess carbohydrates. Dr. Tennant believes that you should eat a balanced diet, but also that you should consume much more protein than the average person does today. Foods that are rich in protein and low in carbohydrates include almonds, apricots, artichokes, asparagus, beets, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, celery, collard greens, cucumbers, green beans, lettuce, mushrooms, olives, peanuts, pecans, soybeans, spinach, summer squash, sunflower seeds, tomatoes, turnip greens, turnips, and walnuts. Don't forget to maintain your common sense while dieting. Don't rush blindly into every fad diet that comes down the pike. Getting expert instruction before embarking on a weight loss program is important. If you don't lose weight properly, you can do serious damage. Temporary and on occasion, permanent setback is the result. I've talked with countless overweight people and have seen startling results when they recognize the mental aspect of their weight program. I experienced these results firsthand when I lost 37 pounds back in 1972, and I'm happy to report that I've maintained that loss. I was able to lose the weight because I thought slender, ate slender, and asked myself at every meal, would a slender person eat this food? I changed my eating habits and started a sensible but disciplined exercise program. As one who has a passion for sweets, I've never met one I didn't like. I knew that I wouldn't be able to permanently stick to a diet that was too restrictive and eliminated sweets altogether. So I decided that the only time I would eat sweets would be on Sunday after church. For the 10 months I took to lose the weight, I got a double dip of my all-time favorite, Brahms French Chocolate Almond Ice Cream, each Sunday. I enjoyed every bite of it and set my sweet clock to go off on the next Sunday at the same time. By following this procedure, I was able to indulge and control my sweet tooth rather than allowing it to control me. You know that when you overload on sugar or have too much caffeine in your system, you receive a substantial negative impact. And research from countless sources validates that alcohol, tobacco, and illegal drugs are health killers, relationship destroyers, and career albatrosses. Needless to say, realizing your potential is difficult when you're boozing, puffing, or snorting. Maintaining your health really isn't an expensive undertaking. Take a good look at some of the most neglected aspects of maintaining good physical condition and the measures that cost the least amount of money. Make certain that you get adequate sleep. You require a certain amount of sleep, preferably at regular times, meaning that you go to bed and arise at the same times each day to establish a rhythm. The required amount of sleep varies from person to person, but you can use this test. If you enjoy good health, but have to force yourself to get out of bed each morning, you probably aren't getting enough sleep. Deep breathing has a positive long-range impact on your health. One deep breath, or far better, two or three, taken at opportune times during the day, energizes you. Drinking plenty of water is important. Most experts agree that 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of water a day are mandatory for optimum health. When you realize that you're thirsty, The dehydration process has already started. Plenty of good, clean water every day keeps your skin supple, improves digestion, and helps to flush toxins out of the body. Vary your activities. At least once every 90 minutes, stand up, stretch, breathe deeply, shift gears, walk to the water cooler and get a drink of water, or even do a couple of aerobic exercises if space permits. Doing so helps to reduce stress, whether mental or physical. And when you reduce stress, you increase your energy level. For years, a good belly laugh has been described as internal jogging. Physicians agree that a sense of humor is an enormous asset to maintaining good physical health. It gives you a better outlook on life, and it's good for you. Scientific evidence validates that saying the right things to yourself can have significant influence. I encourage you to talk to yourself about your health. Self-talking takes only a couple of minutes each evening and a couple of minutes at the start of your day. Square those shoulders, look yourself in the eye, and quietly but firmly say aloud, "I," and say your name, "am a highly motivated, health-conscious individual who is committed to taking care of my health now so that I will enjoy a high quality of life all my life. I am committed to a physical activity program that will increase my energy level and keep my weight under control. I will talk positively about my health and think positive health thoughts. I will eat sensibly and ask myself this question every day. Would a slender, healthy person eat this food or drink this drink? I will regularly get physical exams as a step to preventing serious problems, and I understand that my physical health has a direct bearing on my happiness, my attitude, my family, my job success, my peace of mind, my finances, and my corporate or business success. Let's take a few moments to focus on the spoke of mental success. Losing a job, mate, or friend because of a lousy attitude is unfortunate, especially because a bad attitude can be fixed. I believe that this section, particularly when combined with the information in the rest of this recording, can help you to fix your attitude so that it serves you well in your profession, your family, and all your other relationships. You can find at least two ways to look at virtually everything. A pessimist looks for difficulty in the opportunity, whereas an optimist looks for opportunity in the difficulty. Unfortunately, many people look only at the problem and not at the opportunity that lies within the problem. When you get too close to your problems to think objectively about them, try to keep in mind how your vision can be obstructed. Take a step back and look at the situation from a new angle. Look up instead of down. Words affect your attitude, and your attitude affects your performance, so make sure that your words are positive. Using positive affirmation is a proven technique that works miracles in many lives. Ideally, you should look yourself in the eye as you make the following positive affirmations. Don't be shy. Go ahead and get started. Repeat the following statements to yourself. I clearly understand that failure is an event, not a person, that yesterday really did end last night, and that success isn't final and failure isn't fatal because I fail only if I quit. I have the courage to admit a mistake and to say that I was wrong. I have the courage to ask for help and the courage to say, "I don't know." I have the courage to continually strive to be the person that I am capable of becoming. I have vision in my life, which means that I see not only with my eyes, but also with my heart. I have 525,600 minutes in every year of my life, and I utilize them well to maximize my ability. I am successful because I believe that to be truly educated, I must be mentored by superior minds with greater skills and mature spirits. I discipline myself to do the things I need to do when I need to do them because I know that doing them will enable me someday to do the things I want to do when I want to do them. I clearly understand that if I develop yearning power and apply learning power, I will increase my earning power. I am successful because I don't confuse activity with accomplishment. I know that I can't make it in life as a wandering generality, so I am a meaningful specific. I am successful in all areas of my life because I have a great sense of humor and the ability to laugh at myself. I'm like an eraser. I recognize my mistakes, I learn from my mistakes, and then I erase those mistakes from my memory. I move forward in my life every day, even if it's only a tiny step, because I know that great things are accomplished with tiny moves, but nothing is accomplished by standing still. I'm a hard worker, but I don't overdo it, because I know that the person who is always as busy as a bee may awake and discover that someone else has swiped his or her honey. Today, I will seriously look for the good in every situation and find something about which to praise every person who works with me. Today, I will be friendly to the people I work with and will treat them as though they were completely responsible for my career. Today, I will express gratitude for the career I have and the society of which I am a part, and specifically for my family and friends. I will also express gratitude for the fact that my career is rewarding in ways that go far beyond financial remuneration. Each day is a miniature lifetime, and your attitude concerning each day makes a difference. If you make today a good day and repeat that process daily, you'll live a lifetime of good days. I confess that this approach to life is simple, but it isn't simplistic. Expect today to be a good day, and then do what's necessary to make your expectations come true. The next spoke on the wheel of life is spiritual. Sir John Templeton, one of the wealthiest people in the United States, said, "If we have not developed a reservoir of spiritual wealth, no amount of money is likely to make us happy. Spiritual wealth provides faith. It gives us love. It brings and expands wisdom. Spiritual wealth leads to happiness because it guides us into useful or loving relationships." With spiritual wealth as the foundation and security for our lives, we gain a deep and abiding peace that can't be obtained with material wealth alone. To me, spiritual wealth is the assurance that God, who has a vested interest in me because He created me, loves me no matter what, and that He hears and answers my prayers. My spiritual wealth gives me great peace of mind because my past has been forgiven and my eternity is guaranteed. It increases my happiness substantially because I know that one day I will again see my parents, daughter, brothers, sisters, and friends who share my faith. Many different belief systems exist throughout the world, and I respect each person's right to his or her own personal beliefs. However, as a Christian, I'm going to speak in the language of my own faith in this section and use the Bible as my source, since I believe it is the inspired Word of God and is the book of prophecy with over 4,000 of those prophecies fulfilled without error. The central theme of Success for Dummies is winning relationships. I believe that Christianity is a relationship, not a religion. I believe that religion is man's way of trying to get into heaven, but Christianity is God's way of getting heaven into man. I believe that religion depends on ritual, church membership, and works to get into heaven. Christianity depends on faith to get into heaven. The root of Christianity is faith in Christ, and its fruit is a godly walk with Christ. Every individual is free to express his or her faith through organized religion, where people with common beliefs come together to worship, or unorganized religion, where individuals practice their faith and prayer life without a structured doctrine. However, you don't have to join any group or denomination to have and practice your faith and what you believe about the God of your understanding. If you have not determined what you believe, let me suggest this approach. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous teaches members to find a God of their understanding and to pray to whomever or whatever that is, even if they don't believe in it. If you want to try this approach, pray this prayer. God, or if that word goes against your grain, say, whomever you are. I don't know whether you exist, but I pray that if you do, you will reveal yourself to me. The depth of spirituality is, in my opinion, the degree to which you have a personal relationship with the one whose governing power you honor and obey through your faith. I believe that without that honor and obedience, you cannot fully experience your potential as a human being. I draw this belief from the Bible, John 15:4, which says, "As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me." One of the seven spokes of life is friendship. Friendship stabilizes plenty of relationships, not only in marriage, but in the business and social worlds as well. A friendship is priceless and should be cherished, cultivated, and nurtured. But how do you develop and maintain solid friendships? This section outlines some principles of friendship that can help you improve the friendships you already have and build even more friendships in the future. The first principle is to remember the golden rule. Without a doubt, the greatest friend maker and human relation principle going is to treat other people like you want to be treated. When you show respect for your friends and gratitude for their friendship, you'll be blessed in untold ways. Although the way you treat others affects the way they treat you, the way another person treats you shouldn't determine the way you treat that person. Let me say that again. Although the way you treat others affects the way they treat you, the way another person treats you shouldn't determine the way you treat that person. I've often explained to my children that they should respond to rude behavior with kindness. When people are rude and ugly to you, they're probably behaving that way because they're hurting, not because they want to hurt you. The second principle for friendship building is to avoid criticizing your friends. Human nature being what it is, most people tend to see problems and faults more easily in other people than in themselves. Instead of being eager to dish out criticism all the time, take the sensible, loving approach. Look for the good in other people. Encourage them. Build them up. The secret is simple. Be a good finder, not a fault finder. My third principle is that love, loyalty, and friendship are for sale. This principle may seem a little strange. You may be thinking to yourself, that simply isn't true. These things are extremely valuable and can't be bought at any price. I beg to differ. What you send out truly is what you get back. When you ignore people, you're likely to be ignored. And when you treat them in a grouchy, discourteous way, you're far more likely to be treated similarly. You buy loyalty by being loyal. You buy friendship by being a friend. You buy hope by giving hope, and so on. No person is happy or has friends or love who is not truly a giver. The fourth principle is to be an optimist. Do you enjoy being around a pessimist, someone who is generally described as being able to brighten up a room just by leaving it? The answer is obvious. Most people, when given a choice, prefer to be around people who believe that tomorrow is going to be better than today, instead of being with people who believe that today is even worse than yesterday. Optimists spread cheer wherever they go and make others feel good about themselves. That's a guaranteed way to make friends. The question is, how do you develop that pleasing personality? Well, here's some steps you can take. Smile when you see someone. You don't have to smile so wide you could eat a banana sideways, just a pleasant, friendly smile. Speak in a pleasant, upbeat tone of voice. Talk to people as if they are really good friends of yours, even if they don't really fall into that category yet. Take a course in public speaking. The ability to express yourself is of paramount importance and attracts favorable attention from many sources. Become a better informed person and develop a sense of humor. I particularly encourage you to pick up a couple of good joke books. You can share the one-liners that you read with others, and you don't have to be a comedian to get a smile from people. Personality opens the door and helps you to win friends and influence people. Character keeps the door open and maintains the influence. An important spoke in the wheel is family, and central to most families is a marriage. A perfect marriage doesn't require perfect partners. Ordinary partners can have an extraordinary marriage. Your attitude and approach to your marriage are keys to attaining happiness and harmony, which sounds like great goals. What skills do you need to build a loving relationship? Here are some of the most important ones. Start with a commitment to make the marriage work. Understand that you deceived each other in the courtship process by putting only your best foot forward and leaving it there. Work at verbalizing your true feelings without taking punitive action against your mate. Chances are superb that if you handle the situation gently, lovingly, and with a big hug and smile, your mate will respond appropriately. Take time to build the skill of courteousness. Discourtesy is really disrespect, and you're seldom discourteous to anyone you truly respect. Eliminate the words always and never from your vocabulary, as in, you always do this, or you never do that. Those statements aren't true, and they can elicit nothing but a defensive retort from your mate. Practice looking for the good in your mate and work on finding the humor in problems. Remember that your mate is not a mind reader. You need to gently tell your mate what your needs are. Don't labor under the illusion that you are communicating just because you take turns talking. You need to listen, really listen to what your mate is saying, not mentally preparing a retort to his or her comments. Always remember that telling is sharing, but listening is caring. I've never yet heard of a couple listening themselves out of a marriage. Remember what your marriage means to you and take steps right now to make your marriage better. If you're raising children, the next section is for you. Parenting can be a delight if you approach it with an open heart and an open mind. The following points may seem like basic common sense to you, but many people are so rushed by the pressures of making a living that they don't give much thought to these issues. They wrongly assume that rearing children just happens. They're born, they go to school, they leave home. If only life were so simple. The first issue that parents must face is that they show unconditional love. If you put a condition on your love for your children, they will always wonder whether they have earned or deserved the love you're giving. This wonder breeds insecurity within children, and it ensures difficult times ahead. The next issue makes all parents feel uncomfortable. Whether you like it or not, you must accept that you are a role model. A role model, in simple terms, is an individual whose behavior in a particular role is imitated by others. It is a parent's responsibility to demonstrate such noble qualities as courage, compassion, and genuine concern for others. You may say, ouch, when you hear the next issue. Your kids are not a responsibility that you handle at your convenience. They're a part of your schedule and can bring infinite joy or considerable misery. An hour at the end of a hectic day is not quite enough to get the job done. If possible, stay together to raise your kids. Two-parent families are the ideal arrangement for raising successful kids. It's more than just a cliche to say that the most important thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. And the most important thing a mother can do for her children is to love their father. The message, work at it. Work it out, parents. You and your kids will be glad that you did. Even if you look back on the way you parented your young children or related to your own parents with regret, you don't have to let past hurts continue to damage your relationships today. The good news is that the relationship can be mended. The hard part is that you must initiate action that leads to forgiveness and reconciliation. I encourage you to make contact, either in person, by phone, or through the mail, with anyone who's hurt you and tell that person that you forgive him or her for that hurt. Now, don't just say that you forgive them. You have to actually forgive them. You also may need to ask for forgiveness for the part that you may have played in the breakdown of the relationship. I know that for many people, asking for forgiveness is extremely difficult. You may even need counseling to help you do so. But I encourage you to do whatever it takes to forgive, because the key to being forgiven is to forgive. The concept of you can have everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want is hardcore and practical, yet it's also gentle, loving, and enormously effective. The major objective of this section is to show you how this philosophy works for employers and employees. This is the career spoke of the wheel of life. I recognize that employers can't always provide interesting work, which is something that all employees want. But by being fair, open, and accessible, you can help alleviate frustration on the job and increase employees' job satisfaction. How do you increase job satisfaction? First, take a sincere interest in your employees. People who feel appreciated and respected are more likely to be loyal, happy, and productive. If they really believe that you have their best interest at heart, they are far more inclined to be dedicated to their work and are thus more productive. Next, express appreciation for the work that your employees do. The cheapest, most effective motivation going is a simple, pleasant thank you for a job well done. No, that doesn't include thanking employees for getting to work on time and doing what they're expected to do. Those accomplishments are part of the job. But at the end of the week, if they've done these things, a simple, "It's nice to have you with us," or "Thank you for a good job," goes a long way toward reducing turnover. Third, be specific when you praise employees. Generalizations just don't work. Saying, "I really admire the way you brought this account into line and kept the customer happy at the same time," is far better than saying, "You did a good job with the Hilliard account." Finally, keep in mind that praise goes only so far. And if an individual consistently does a great job, he or she needs more tangible recognition, such as a cash bonus, a day off, or a dinner at a nice restaurant. Next, let's look at what you can do to make success attainable for your employees. The "you can have everything in life you want" concept specifically applies to relationships with employees because you train those people whom you consider valuable and you reprimand those whom you consider savable. When I say reprimand, I don't mean chew them out. You need to follow a gentler process in order for correction to be effective. Step 1. Make sure that the employee has a clear understanding of what you expect from him or her. Bringing employees aboard, assigning them a new job, and expecting them to perform up to your standards when they have no idea what those standards are is unfair, unrealistic, and counterproductive. So make sure to communicate your expectations. Step 2. Never leave a new employee to fend for themselves on day 1. The feeling of uncertainty and insecurity can be overwhelming. Also, always double-check that the employee has the necessary skills for the job you hired him or her to do by walking them through their duties. You need to be certain that their skill level qualifies them to do the job you expect them to do. And if you find areas that need improvement, arrangements for the proper training can be made immediately. Step 3. Inspect to make sure that you're getting what you expect. This step is especially important for new employees and is useful on a periodic basis for all employees. The fact that you inspect doesn't mean that you don't trust your employees. This approach communicates that you're interested in what they're doing. Inspecting also gives you an opportunity to praise and encourage employees, and if their performance needs improvement, you have a marvelous opportunity to instruct them. This process enables you to take step 4. Step 4. Set a standard for each employee to follow. An employee who knows the standard can strive to excel and produce above standard accomplishments. They will also have factual information that lets them know when they are doing substandard work. Step 5. Keep in mind that failure is an event. It's not a person. While hoeing our garden as a child, I learned an important lesson from my mother, who was a great leader and manager. She followed all the preceding steps, taught me how to do what she wanted me to do, demonstrated clearly and assured me that she was going to inspect to make certain that I gave her what she expected. When she saw what I had done, she shook her head and said, "Son, for most boys, this would be all right, but my son can do better." She effectively met step 6. Praise the performer. Criticize the performance. My mother criticized the performance, which needed criticizing. That's the message the employer needs to convey to the employee. You're too good a worker, you're too talented or skilled to turn in work like this. You can do better, you always have. I'd appreciate it if you would give it another shot. If you follow these 6 steps, your employees begin their career with you on a positive, reassuring note. You create an atmosphere that says, "We want you to succeed in your job because you are on our team now." Now let's take a look at a crucial spoke in the wheel of life, character. The foundation upon which all permanent success is constructed is the character of the individual, including at the company, institution, or government level. Collectively, individuals make up society, and the success of any society is a reflection of the character of the individuals within that society. Think about it. With a character foundation, lying, cheating, and stealing are eliminated. Parents with character don't abuse or abandon their mates or children. Alcoholism, drug abuse, and drug dealing stop if everyone has a strong foundation of character, so crime, violence, and poverty decline dramatically, as do hunger, disease, and out-of-wedlock births. With character and the right attitude, the racism problem can be solved within a generation or two. To get society in high gear, every member of society needs to understand the role that he or she can play in societal wellness. Setting an example of morality, integrity, and character is a good place to start. Keep in mind that one person, you, can make a difference. A moment's reflection may be all you need to realize that no one is truly self-made. You're influenced directly and indirectly by many, many people throughout your lifetime, each of whom adds a brick to the building of your life, even if only in a small way. I encourage you to get out a sheet of paper and start making a list of all the people who have made an impact on your life. As you search your memory bank, you'll probably be amazed at the number of people who have influenced you. Making this list is an important step towards success. I hope you take that step now. In conclusion, when you plan and prepare carefully, you can legitimately expect to have success in your efforts. When you recognize and develop your winning qualities, you will become the winner you were born to be, which means I will see you. And yes, I really do mean you, not just at the top, but over the top.
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. To order additional cassettes or to receive a complete catalog of Harper Audio and Cadman titles, please call us at 1-800-331-3761. That's 1-800-331-3761. Thank you.